Welcome to This Week in Money. I'm Jim Goddard. Today, Ross Clark from chartsandmarkets.com runs down the major markets. He explains why the U.S. markets were down while Canadian stocks were up at the end of the week. He checks out the U.S. and Canadian dollars, gold, and crude. Doug Casey, website dougcaseystake.com, talks about his latest novel, how the U.S. dollar just looks strong, and whether gold miners are a good investment right now. Rick Ackerman, editor of rickspicks.com, talks about the Fed's obsession with inflation, along with how oil, gold, battery metals might do. He also has a special offer for our listeners. We'll talk to Ross Clark right after this.
Media recognition from Bloomberg, Reuters, Recycling Trade Publications. Patented process for 100% recovery of critical metals, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, aluminum. American Manganese is focused on recycling lithium-ion batteries for electric vehicles. American Manganese trades on the TSX Venture, AMY, the U.S., AMYZF, and Frankfurt 2AM. For more information, visit AmericanManganeseInc.com or phone me, Larry Ray, at 778-574-4444.
Welcome to This Week in Money, the source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Ross Clark from chartsandmarkets.com, where you'll find insightful market commentary and timely technical analysis. You can find him on Twitter at ChartsByRoss. Welcome back to the show, Ross.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Jim.
Ross, the week ended with the New York markets down, the Canadian stock market up. Why the split and what's the action there?
Well, I mean, some of it's interest rates, and some of it is the fact that this U.S. dollar index just continues to barrel along on the upside, and that's having some real pressure as far as the U.S. stock market is concerned. You know, we're seeing the dollar index up over 109, starting off September with one of the seven big buy, overbought signals that we've had since 1970. So pretty big extreme that we've got out here. With that, you're seeing all of the U.S. stock indices under fair amount of pressure. You take a look at commodities, a bit of a bounce, the gold market up today, silver up, but overall trends are down there, and they're just bouncing off the support levels. But bottom line is that looking at the 20-day moving averages as potential resistance levels, and the trend to the downside on most of these items appears to be in place with the rising U.S. dollar.
How is the Canadian dollar doing against U.S. dollar? I know other world currencies are struggling against the greenback.
Well, if you take a look at the others, and like the British pound is just getting hammered in here. Canadian dollar, though, we're double bottoming against the July low. So even though it's seen pressure, we've come from 78.5 down to 76 and change just in this last 3 weeks. So seeing pressure, and if you look over as we like to with the crude oil market, you can see that crude had been up a pretty good bounce into a couple of weeks ago, but it's back down around 86 again. And the only thing as far as got in the energy products that looks reasonable here is natural gas, which had been up over 9, having a good correction here. And typically, and this will be one of the probably the trades that you want to look at in the coming weeks here, the natural gas index historically likes to put in a bottom from mid-August through the middle of September, and you want to find an oversold condition in there, and we're getting pretty close to it. I would say at this rate, by the time we're talking next Friday, you might have a nice little buy signal as far as the nat gas is concerned. And this week we put out a list of stocks that, independent of the commodity itself, some stocks that might perform on the upside.
What's going on with gold?
Gold and silver back down, retesting the lows of the summer. Silver actually taking it out. It's much, much weaker. The gold-silver index is moving steadily in favor of gold. And for all that the two of them look a little oversold right now, I think that a recovery back towards the 20-day moving average may very well be in the cards. And as far as the gold market was concerned, that might be back, say, in the 1730 to 1740-ish range. Closed here at pretty much near the lows on the week. But look for a bounce is probably a bit of a selling opportunity. Seasonally, we should be setting up for a decent rally as we move through September. So let's see how it does once it tests resistance.
Ross, thank you so much for the update.
Pleasure to be with you, Jim.
My guest has been Ross Clark from chartsandmarkets.com. You can find him on Twitter at chartsbyross. Coming up, Doug Casey, next on This Week in Money.
Always consult your investment professional before making any investment decision. Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com. This Week in Money is archived online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com.
Welcome back. My guest is Doug Casey, author of Assassin, the latest novel in the High Ground series, available online at highgroundseries.com. Doug's YouTube channel is Doug Casey's Take. His website, internationalman.com. He's speaking to us from Virginia. Doug, welcome back to This Week in Money.
Thanks, Jim. It's a pleasure to be back.
How are your novels doing?
Well, they're doing well because these are very turbulent times that we're living in. And there are a lot of things that you can say in the form of fiction that you best not, even dare not say in the form of nonfiction. So the way I see it is that the world and the U.S. are entering what I call the Greater Depression. There's going to be a lot of turbulence and a lot of violence. So in Speculator, I cover where our hero, Charles Knight, gets involved in a bush war in Africa and gets involved in the mining business. And then he becomes a drug lord. And in Assassin, he's just so pissed off at so many things that he decides there's some people that just need killing. So that's the theme so far. I think that your listeners will enjoy reading that book. It's available either at the website that you mentioned, or on Amazon, of course.
How are things at Doug Casey's Take on YouTube and Odyssey?
It's growing because the things that I talk about are not the things that you typically hear on MSNBC or Fox or, for that matter, any of the national networks. Tune into it. I think people might enjoy it.
How can people subscribe to International Man?
Well, we have lots of articles, and they're all free. It's internationalman.com. And, for instance, today I have an article on comparing the collapse of the Roman Empire to the ongoing collapse of the United States. A lot of similarities. And, of course, we cover current things on investments besides. So it's an interesting site worth subscribing to.
What are the similarities? Too big for their own britches, trying to control too much of the world? What is it?
Well, the reasons for the collapse of Rome. There was a scholar named Demant who some years ago listed 210 reasons for the collapse of the Roman Empire. A lot of them are redundant, but in my view, it boils down to the state becoming too powerful, taxes becoming too high, inflation getting totally out of control, destroying the assets of the average person. And, of course, military adventurism, where the Roman army became by far the dominant force in the empire. So these things are all quite similar to what's going on in the U.S. today, unfortunately. There are other things, but that'll do for starters.
Does June 17th look like it could have been a significant bottom for the stock markets?
I don't think so. We've had essentially a 40-year bull market it started back in the early 80s when interest rates, what the U.S. government was paying for money, ranged 15, 16, 17, 18, 19% even. That's what the U.S. government was paying. And they've been going down since then. And, of course, the stock market, for lots of reasons, tends to fluctuate inversely with interest rates. Interest rates are going back up. Not only that, but Americans have elected actual Bolsheviks, Jacobins, in Washington. Well, they're not actually Bolsheviks and Jacobins, but the Bidenistas have the same views as those people did in Russia in 1917 and France in 1789. So that it's not going to be good for business or the stock market or the average guy.
If the U.S. dollar continues to get stronger, will the market suffer?
Well, I'm all for a strong currency, but we don't have a strong currency. The dollar is losing value against real goods. It's something like 15% per year, not the 9.7 or whatever it is that the government says. So we don't have a strong currency. It's just strong relative to other currencies. But it's not strong because it's losing value relative to real things. I'm all for a strong currency, but we actually don't have one.
Inflation continues to be the elephant in the room. Could inflation be reversed by slowing down or turning off the printing presses?
That's the only thing that will reverse inflation. But with the federal government in the U.S. running trillion, even $2 trillion annual deficits, there's no way they can get that money other than by printing it up, courtesy of the Federal Reserve. So it's not going to happen. Inflation's high and going much higher. And there's no way around it at this point because the government has said, and they're quite sincere, that spending is the way out of this. Of course, that's the opposite of the way out of it. But no, inflation's going higher.
Fed Chair Jay Powell said higher rates are needed for longer and it's going to cause some pain. What are your thoughts on interest rates?
Well, interest rates, depending on what we look at, let's say that they're 2, 3, 4% in that area. And the Federal Reserve is trying to raise them. But they're still negative. When inflation is running 10 to 15% and interest rates are low single digits, you're still being, in effect, paid to borrow and punished for savings. So eventually, I think interest rates have to go much, much higher into the teens. But that's down the road. And as indebted as society is today, as interest rates go higher, it's going to cause a lot of people to go bankrupt because they won't be able to afford those interest rates to pay for the huge amounts of debt they've taken on. And incidentally, that includes the U.S. government. So we're headed for major trouble, truly major trouble.
As interest rates rise, are people using debt to pay debt?
Well, certainly the U.S. government is. Let's say the disclosed deficit of the U.S. government is, let's say it's $32 trillion, round numbers. Back in the days of 1% interest rate, that was about $320 billion per year, which incidentally is the cost of all of World War II. But now, as the government is paying more like 3%, we're talking $1 trillion in interest rates. If the Federal Reserve continues raising the interest rates, look, they've painted themselves into a corner at this point. There becomes a level when you have so much debt, you just can't pay it, including by printing money up. So we've actually reached pretty much the end of the road.
It looks like we could be headed for a real estate crash. How severe could it be, and are there signals to look for when it bottoms?
Well, the problem with real estate, which has been very, very good to me, is that it rests upon a sea of debt, and real estate prices correlate with interest rates. I mean, a house that I can afford to buy at 3% mortgage rates, I can't afford to buy at 6. Absolutely can't afford to buy at 9 interest rates. So as interest rates go higher, it's going to hurt the real estate market. And interest rates are going higher.
We keep hearing gold and silver are manipulated. If you purchase gold or silver, are you betting on the metal or the manipulation?
Well, I don't believe that they're manipulated. I will say that government entities don't want to see the prices of any commodities go up, including gold and silver. But they don't really care about gold and silver. They believe that gold is a cut of rock. So, sure, they'd rather be lower, go down in price, but it's not being manipulated any more than the price of copper or wheat or nickel or uranium or every other raw material is being manipulated. I mean, the government would like to be able to set the prices of these things, but no, that's a false meme. Don't believe it. The market sets prices.
There seems to be an extreme push for electric vehicles. Could battery metals see a strong bull market ahead regardless of what other metals are doing?
Yeah, battery metals, at least at the present time, are basically copper, nickel, vanadium, and also graphite is important for them. Look, electric vehicles are nice. Lots of advantages to them. I'm a car guy from way back when. I've got nothing against electric vehicles. But the grid, the power grid in North America, or Europe for that matter, can't pump out enough electricity without building lots more power plants and lots more transmission lines to charge those vehicles. So that I think that electric vehicles are not going to make it. The average guy can't afford it. The amount of metals that are going to have to be mined to build the batteries and change the infrastructure are just gigantic. So, electric vehicles, just like wind and solar power, which are nice as a supplement in certain places, in certain areas, but oil and gas, and especially uranium, are where we get our power and will be. A long time to come.
Is it ironic that right now, because of the heat wave in California and people using air conditioning 24 hours a day, they're asking people not to charge their electric vehicles, yet in 2025, California wants to ban the sale of gasoline vehicles and only sell electrics?
Yes, well, the governor of California is actually insane, as are the bureaucracies that run California. So he can say what he'd like, but if he passes laws trying to make these things happen, it's just going to collapse the economy. It's going to be lots of unemployment, and people's savings are going to vanish. It's not going to happen. But I've got no sympathy for Californians because they elected this fool. So I guess they're just getting what they deserve.
Do you see any currently unloved sectors in the junior markets?
Well, I am a long-time gold bug in that I believe that gold should be used as the national currency. It's not politically manipulated. It's just a commodity. It's historically always been used as money, and it's a very good money because it can't be created out of thin air. Right now, gold is about, 1,700, 1,725. It's been coming off for the last 6 months, 9 months. I'm a gold bull right now, and I'm especially bullish on gold mining stocks. They're very, very cheap. All-in sustaining costs for the productive industry of gold, the companies that actually mine, is about $1,000 an ounce. At $1,700 an ounce, gold miners are still coining money. But nobody wants to own them because fund managers don't believe in gold. They think it's a pet rock. I think they're going to prove to be very, very wrong in that respect. And, of course, miners are looked upon as a 19th century choo-choo train industry. Funds don't want to own them. The public has been brainwashed against gold. It's setting up for another big bull market. In gold and silver, actually.
Does it take a certain personality type or mindset to withstand the ups and downs of junior mining stocks?
They're the most volatile class of securities on the planet. They're as volatile or more volatile than internet stocks ever were, or meme stocks today. They're subject to all kinds of psychological vagaries, in addition to the vagaries of looking for a mineral, which is very costly to look, to find and look for. Forget about to mine. I'm very bullish on them, frankly. Most of them are burning matches. They're not heirlooms. They're not investments. They're speculations. But I think right now, they're excellent speculations.
Are there any really good promoters in mining stocks these days?
Good question. Well, a promoter is kind of the vernacular word for a financier. And a lot of the guys that were greats, like Robert Friedland, Ross Beaty, Lucas Lundin, who died recently, they've all got gray hair at best. So a new crowd will come up. But recent generations of kids haven't gone into the mining business. Everybody wants to be a tech billionaire, create an app, and make a lot of money without having to play in the dirt. So, there's a new generation that's coming up, but I don't want to name any names just at the moment.
What are the biggest wins you've had in junior mining stocks?
Well, look, gold, when I got involved in this area, coincidentally, about 1971, when Nixon devalued the dollar, gold has gone up 50 times in price. So over most of my lifetime, I'm basically have the wind at my back with gold going up. And gold has been very, very good to me, as have the mining stocks. But the biggest wins are often unpredictable. I mean, what was my biggest single win? It might have been Briex, which coincidentally was the biggest fraud in mining history. But it looked like a giant discovery before it was proven to be a fraud, which is not unusual in the mining business, always has been, since the days of Mark Twain and before. Another big win I had was because a broker in Chicago, who's dead now, took a stock under his wing and personally drove it from $1 to $20. And I owned a lot of that stock. That was a nice hit. And, of course, Diamond Fields. That was an accident. They were looking for diamonds off Namibia. Instead, they found one of the biggest nickel deposits in the world in Labrador. And I had a huge amount of that. It under a dollar. It went to over $200. So these things happen in the mining business. And of course, there are companies that just grow because they're competently run. Those are the kind you want and the kind you look for. But because these stocks are so volatile, when they're cheap, like they are, when the market changes, you can make a fortune.
Would you ever move back to Canada?
I like Canada. I lived there for years, Vancouver. But, you know, I'm afraid that Canada is headed in the wrong direction, just as the U.S. is. And it seems that Trudeau has entrenched himself for the indefinite future. And he's trying to transform the culture of Canada into something more resembling that of Cuba. The rumor has always been that Castro is his actual father. But as much as I like Canada, no plans to go back, certainly not as a resident.
It looks like Trudeau is going to call an election in Canada in the next few weeks. All the establishment party leaders have ties to the World Economic Forum, and the World Economic Forum has managed to get its young global leaders in places of power all over the world, including running countries, provinces, states, and cities. One theory we've heard is that widespread election fraud made this happen. Your thoughts on that?
I wouldn't doubt it. I wouldn't doubt that there was widespread election fraud in 2020, quite frankly. And the situation that way is getting more and more serious in the U.S. So, yes, you're quite correct. These people that go to the World Economic Forum, they share the same values, share the same philosophy, they have the same education, they have the same friends, they're all in positions of power, and they work with each other to keep each other in power. So, it's not like a world government, but it's the next best, or I should say worst thing. So I think times are going to be really, really turbulent throughout the 2020s as these people try to impose their will upon their countries and the average guy everywhere.
Have you watched 2,000 Mules?
I haven't. I heard about it. It describes the election fraud in the U.S. in 2020. Am I right?
I have not seen it myself, so I don't know.
Yeah, well, that's what I've heard. And like I said, the odds that Democrats cheated then and will cheat in the upcoming elections in November and in 2024 are high, very high. I mean, the U.S. is on the ragged edge of a something that will resemble a civil war, because the red people and the blue people actually hate each other and they can't communicate with each other. It's going to get scary.
From the outside looking in, do Trudeau's actions look like those of a dictator?
Yeah, I would be very afraid of Trudeau. What he did regarding the Canadian truckers who were heroic, I mean, locking down their bank accounts. I mean, this guy is completely out of control. He's acting like a South American caudillo, a South American dictator. One of the worst people leading any major country in the world today, quite frankly. But will he win again? I don't know. It's going to be shameful if he does.
Your thoughts on climate change and eating bugs?
Well, look, one of my hobbies has always been geology. And what we know is the world is 4.5 billion years old, and the climate has changed constantly and radically throughout that time. And the people that are promoting climate change today, their numbers are fabricated, their computer programs are dishonest, their predictions are untrue, but they managed to create a worldwide hysteria. And they're using it to control people, very much the way the COVID hysteria was used to control people and filter more power towards the governments of the world. So climate change, sure, the climate changes. And for all we know, the next change could be a new ice age. I mean, we're still in the Pleistocene, quite frankly, which has been characterized by about 20 ice ages, as best as we can tell, in the last 2.5 million years. So what really controls the climate is the sun and other factors, not carbon dioxide, which is basically plant food.
It looks like Starbucks is pushing for cashless transactions. Is this a good business model?
Well, I'm afraid the world is going in that direction. And it's too bad because, paper currency that you had in your wallet was not good, but it's better than digital currency, which means that when the government gets control of your digital account, they can debit or credit it any way they want. And, you're, in effect, for all the conveniences of, digital currencies, it's, you stand a risk of being reduced to the status of a medieval serf, where you own nothing, and you better get to like it. It's a very scary and negative and dangerous thing, the trend towards digital currencies. And the big corporations of the world are so hooked up with the WEF and governments and centers of power generally that, that's the direction we're going in. So make sure that you own a bunch of silver coins in your own possession and a bunch of small gold coins in your own possession. If you don't own them, go out tomorrow and buy some.
We're hearing that invading military forces could already be in various countries through massive open immigration. If there's any truth to this, where would it be safer to live? Is it easier for invaders to take control of a city or a rural area?
Well, you know, the conquest of the Roman Empire, which took place by the barbarian tribes from the north, was basically accomplished by mass migration, not so much military victories. That was part of it, too. But I understand, and who knows what numbers are reliable or believable, but it is said that since Joe Biden was elected in the U.S., that over 4 million migrants have crossed the southern border of the U.S. Now, where are those people? And what are they doing? And how are they being supported? And where are they living? I mean, they're here, but, you know, they're an alien force that aren't Americans. I mean, how would it be if in Canada, 4 million people from an alien culture speaking a different language, different traditions? I mean, I've often joked in the past, hey, there's nothing wrong with Canada that 40 million Nigerians couldn't cure. But it wouldn't be Canada anymore. Not that they're not perfectly nice people, but it's going to overturn society as we know it, here and there, both. So, you know, these things change over time. Everything changes over time. But when things change really quickly and artificially, it usually gets ugly.
As things get worse, would living in currently low crime areas be a good idea?
Yeah. Yeah. I suggest you not live in the big cities. There's no guarantee that, you know, food is going to appear on your local grocery store shelf. And it's always been said the whole world is about six meals from chaos. So if you're smart, you'll live in a small town or the country.
Any tips on how to live amongst the sheep?
Well, look, on the one hand, it's best to be quiet, keep your head down, and go with the flow. But then you're just a sheep yourself. So I think that it's incumbent upon people to believe in traditional values, personal freedom, Western civilization, to speak out when they hear things that are stupid or evil or destructive. So living among the sheep, well, I don't really want to live among the sheep, to be quite honest with you.
U.S. midterms are just over 2 months away. How bad could things get in the U.S. between now and the midterms?
Based upon Biden's outrageous speech on Thursday night, it was almost a declaration of war against half the country. I was actually shocked by the things he said. And, of course, he doesn't write his own speeches. It's these absolutely horrible Jacobins in back of him that, you know, put him up to it and then prompted him and had him say these things. But it was almost a declaration of war against half the country. And I don't know who's going to win these elections in November. But I'm afraid that at some point, the so-called deplorables or the MAGA people, as Biden calls them, I don't know what they're going to do. Hopefully they'll just have a general strike. And since they're the people that actually produce things, the economy would come to grind to a total halt, which it will eventually anyway, if the Democrats win the next couple of elections, as far as I'm concerned. But it's going to be turbulent. And, you know, I'd rather watch it on my widescreen from a secure location, not my front window.
We keep hearing about a depopulation agenda. If there's truth to this, how significantly could smaller populations affect markets and economies?
Well, it is funny the way in Western countries, in fact, most countries in the world, people are not reproducing adequately to maintain the population, certainly not to grow the population. And I think it's part of the agenda of the WEF people to radically reduce the population of the world. I mean, you have this person, Noah Harari. Yuval Noah Harari, whatever his name is. He's kind of a court intellectual of WEF talking about useless mouths. Well, there are useless mouths, people on welfare, of course, but those aren't the ones he's talking about particularly. Yeah, I think there is a drive to reduce the world's population. People are the enemy, and Mother Earth is the friend. Of course, Mother Earth doesn't know or care about us, but these people want the Earth as a private playground for themselves, maybe with serfs making their lives comfortable. But bad trend. One more bad trend.
If a depopulation is underway, how could it be stopped?
How can it be stopped? You know, you can't change the great trends of history. It's very, very hard. And the culture itself has been changed all over the world. Urbanization militates towards smaller families and so forth. And I wouldn't doubt that as bad as the great COVID hysteria was for the economy, perhaps the next, but COVID itself was slightly worse than the annual flu, where the average age of descendants was about 80. I wouldn't doubt that there's something being brewed up that could actually be devastating, a new great black plague of some type. Something wicked this way comes.
Could forced supply shortages continue indefinitely?
Look, there's no guarantee of anything in the world. And if you destroy the delicate balance of supply chains and supply and demand and specialization and division of labor, there's no guarantee that a lot of us aren't going to go back to having to grub roots and berries. So especially cutting off energy supplies, the whole world runs on energy. And if you make that too expensive or unavailable, everything falls apart. And that's happening too. I'm sorry to be so unremittingly gloomy, Jim, but I'm just calling them the way I see them.
Do you think the push for digital ID will be successful, especially in Canada?
Oh, it's a catastrophe from the point of view of personal freedom and privacy. Will it be successful? I hope the average Canadian resists it. And when asked for a digital ID, just says no. But will it be successful? Well, it'll be so convenient, and they'll try to make it necessary. So it's hard to fight these great trends. Once again, I'm not optimistic about the outcome.
Has Canada taken the first step with its Arrive Can app that has to be on your phone if you're going to cross the border?
Oh, God. I know. Crossing the border everywhere is becoming harder and more controlled and more digital. Listen, I remember when I was a kid, Americans and Canadians could just drive across the border, period, without really any identification at all. So we're kind of getting used to being locked down everywhere. Not good.
How bad do you think things could get in Canada and the U.S.?
As bad as you can imagine. There's no guarantees of anything, quite frankly. We've had many, many good years, but one of the problems with all the debt in the world is it's an indication that we've been living above our means. In other words, if you have lots of savings, it means you've been living below your means. If you have lots of debt, it means you've been living above your means. So I think the chickens are coming home to roost.
Are college degrees today making graduates think they're much smarter than they are?
College degrees are largely, I would say that they've long been a misallocation of time and money, but they're worse now. I mean, it's idiotic paying a ridiculous amount of money to go off and be indoctrinated for 4 years. And in the case of most people, they're not learning science, technology, engineering, math, or even the classics. They're taking trivial subjects of passing interest and being indoctrinated. So for anybody thinking of going to college, I'd say, look, take a look at how much money it's going to cost you. Take a look at those 4 years of time and think of all the other things that you could do with that time and money. So don't go off to college in lockstep automatically. It's a mistake today. College degrees are increasingly worthless, or less than worthless, I'd say sometimes.
Where can people follow you and find out more about your books?
Well, Speculator and Drug Lord and Assassin are all on Amazon. And other than that, I have a podcast at on YouTube, Doug Casey's Take, and internationalman.com, which is free, and I write a weekly article, and some other great guys write articles the other 6 days of the week. So I invite all your listeners to show up there. I think they're going to be in for some interesting listens and reads.
Doug, thank you so much for being on This Week in Money.
Well, my pleasure, Jim, and we'll do it again sometime after the election and see how things turn out. I hope I'm wrong on a lot of this stuff.
My guest has been Doug Casey. His website, internationalman.com. He was speaking to us from Virginia. Coming up, Rick Ackerman, next on This Week in Money.
Media recognition from Bloomberg, Reuters, Recycling Trade Publications. Patented process for 100% recovery of critical metals, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, aluminum. American Manganese is focused on recycling lithium-ion batteries for electric vehicles. American Manganese trades on the TSX Venture, AMY, the U.S., AMYZF, and Frankfurt 2AM. For more information, visit AmericanManganeseInc.com or phone me, Larry Ray, at 778-574-4444.
This Week in Money is archived online at talkdigitalnetwork.com.
Welcome back. My guest is Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks. His website, rickackerman.com. He's speaking to us from New Jersey. Welcome back to This Week in Money.
Well, always a pleasure, Jim. Thanks for inviting me on.
Can you tell us a bit about Rick's Picks, and do you have a special trial offer for our listeners?
We've got a very special offer. If you go to rickackerman.com, up top, there's an option for a free trial subscription, and you'll be able to tune in on pretty much everything we do, including the two chat rooms, for free. The chat rooms draw great traders from around the world, and they share some very, well, lately, very profitable ideas in real time. So, again, Rick's Picks is at rickackerman.com, and just take the free trial and be sure to say hello when you get in the chat room.
Rick, could central bankers switch from quantitative easing to quantitative tightening and rein in inflation?
I'm not a big believer in the central bank. I know that the idiotic things that they announce on Fridays in particular and do have their short-term impact on the market, but I always sort of looked at the Fed governors as if not clowns, certainly charlatans, because the only thing they've done since the Fed was created almost 110 years ago was just cheapen the dollar. So that's what they do. And as far as easing and tightening, it is kind of silly at the civilizational level for the economies and the thinking about how economies work to be so inbred with all the Fed malarkey about loosening and tightening money. You know, why should an economy depend on handouts from the Fed in order to get by? So what we've got is an economy that's kind of lost its moorings. It no longer is tied to the signals which would otherwise tell us how much it should cost to borrow.
Is a stronger U.S. dollar deflationary?
Not per se, but it will produce the chief symptom of deflation, which is an increase in the real burden of debt. And you and I have talked about this a bit. You know, everybody's all obsessed about inflation, which we certainly have in spades at the consumer, you know, in the consumer economy. For a lot of reasons, really, some of which have to do with Fed just monetization, putting a lot of borrowable money out there, and in some cases sending checks outright to a lot of people. But the strong dollar is definitely a limiting. It will put the kibosh on inflation, because the more valuable the dollar gets, the more anyone who owes dollars will be burden to repay them, and that's what's going to happen. You'll find that the deflationary forces that are still latent in the economy right now, they're definitely submerged beneath the level of consumer inflation that we have. But it's many orders of magnitude larger than the things that are producing inflation. And to quantify that, the inflation arises out of a global economy in goods and services that's probably around $200 trillion. But the financial edifice, which is borrowing, it's leveraged and in some cases hyper-leveraged borrowing, all tied to the dollar, that represents the deflationary juggernaut, and it aggregates to something like $2 quadrillion plus. So that's a very big deflationary juggernaut, and at some point the strong dollar will actualize that juggernaut and produce a catastrophic deflation.
The Fed looks ready to keep interest rates rising. How long could they rise for, and how high could they go?
We've talked about that too. They've risen beyond how high they have to go to throttle inflation. And when Powell or one of the other clowns gets out there and talks about how, you know, they're going to be, that they talk hawkish, there's no reason for it. You know, when interest rates already peaked, within a hair of the 3.56 target on the 10-year that you and I talked about maybe a year ago. And, I think that's quite high enough to throttle the U.S. and global economy, obviously to a much greater extent than the Fed would ever intend. So another thing we've talked about is how interest rates can sit where exactly where they are, or even go lower, and they could still represent a crushing burden, really, again, to all who owe dollars. So if you keep interest rates right where they are, and we have something like the experience of 2007 and 8, where the value of the collateral, particularly residential real estate, is collapsing, then, you know, your 2 or 3% nominal rate becomes a real rate of 5, 6, 7, 8. Well, it was even more than that, because home prices fell at a rate of about more than 10% a year. So, you know, interest rates are insignificant. It's the real rate of interest which determines the burden of debt that matters. So, yeah, interest rates are high enough already.
Is the push to raise interest rates a big warning for real estate and the holders of debt?
No, they were warned 10 years ago. More than 10 years ago with the collapse of 2007-8. They learned nothing, because we've inflated to much higher levels. You know, you used to be able to buy a nice home for $10 million, but if you want the upper end, you got to pay $80-90 million. And of course, when you scale that down to all the people buying tiny little Eichlers and ranchers for $1.2 to $1.8 million in Southern California, you can see how inflated the market is. And I'm not going to say it can't get more inflated, but I think it's over. I think we've really, that home prices have peaked, and that represents another very powerful deflationary force that's yet to come.
Do you think the June 17th bottom for the stock markets will hold?
Yeah, I think Cramer said that, and of course, whatever Cramer says goes, but no, we haven't seen the bottom. And when I look at the market on a day-to-day basis, the rallies they're a complete fraud. And I've described in minute detail how the fraud occurs, how essentially the biggest piece of the rally is occurring at 3 a.m. when there's essentially no selling volume at all. There's no liquidity. So stocks just sort of waft higher. Or, you know, one tactic that's used very commonly is to take the market down overnight on very thin, bids and offers. And by the time the opening bell rings, the shorts realize there's no supply there, and they scramble to cover. This has been the chief mechanism for driving Apple to within 6 or 7% of record highs on this last run-up. And, of course, Apple is the only stock that the chimpanzees who manage our money care about. It's been kind of an autopilot, just keep your money in Apple and we'll all do just fine. So Apple has been the stock that's most supported and most clearly reflects the fraud that's in that is the mechanism that pushes stocks higher. So it's mainly short covering, but into thin markets, and we've got it today. Certainly, I'm not going to say with absolute certitude that we're in a bear rally, meaning we're not going to make new highs, because when you string enough fake rallies together, enough short squeeze rallies, especially if it pushes your only important bellwether up to within, shooting distance of record highs, the phony rallies affect a psychological change in investors that cause the rallies to become the real deal. So that's, I wouldn't rule that out, but I do think that the market shows weakness pretty consistently now, that makes the June low look, it's not going to hold. I very strongly doubt that it will.
The price of crude has declined since it put in a June top. Is the price of crude tied inversely to the U.S. dollar? And what do you see ahead for the price of crude?
The dollar and crude are everything. And, over the last quite a while, really, we've been talking a pretty bearish talk about crude. And, I've given, I think the price will eventually fall under $40 a barrel, but it is part. The weakness that we've seen in crude is definitely a part of a slowdown in demand, particularly from China, the manufacturing economy at the margin, which tends to set crude prices. So it's the I think crude is headed lower, but again, subject to a little buffeting as we may experience in the consumer economy. Mainly, there's inflation in the pipeline to the extent that our groceries this autumn are going to come from soil that was enriched with nitrogen and fertilizer that was extremely expensive. So all of the cost push inflation that we're going to experience has yet to materialize. So we could still have another flurry of CPI inflation this fall. But it may have the countervailing pressure of a depression in Europe or whatever's coming there. You tune in Tucker and they've got little spots on how Germany and Poland, they're harvesting wood there to get them through the winter.
Natural gas has been moving to new highs. Could the price of natural gas move even higher?
Natural gas can kind of do anything it wants. It's one of the hugest rig markets out there, and I guess it's really being charitable to refer to natural gas as a market. It's not. It's really kind of a carnival midway of pricing mechanisms, but I don't know. It's too complicated to handicap, because on the one hand, we've got Russia throttling the supply of natural gas to Europe, and supposedly U.S. suppliers are shipping out a lot of natural gas, I guess, in its liquid form. And the market gets kind of strange, because Germany is not really equipped with the ports to handle the LNG vehicles. They have to be isolated, because occasionally you'll get explosions, and they could be really big ones. If you bring in a tanker of liquid natural gas and it goes off. So Germany is mostly, I guess they're building pipelines, a little bit of infrastructure right now, but the flow of natural gas from U.S. to Europe is it's very tricky. But to the extent that we're selling natural gas to them at all, it means the U.S. will experience probably some price increases itself.
Gold's been pulling back. What do you see ahead for gold?
I think gold's bottoming, but I've been saying that for a while, and boy, it's a bruiser of a bottom. I did feel like it would come down into the 1600s, but I'm not predicting disaster for gold. I don't see another big leg down. I just see gold is attempting to bottom here, and all I can say is I think we're close.
Silver's also pulled back. What do you see ahead for silver?
Same thing, maybe $14 an ounce.
Do the latest economic numbers show the U.S. is being in or heading into a recession?
All the talk about recession has become so politicized that it's the kind of crap that I tune out completely. You don't need the newspapers or the idiots who, you know, the talking heads or certainly the politicians and economists to tell you what's going on. Anytime someone's talking about, well, the economy really doesn't look that bad, what they're talking about is asset inflation. You know, home prices are still ridiculously high. That's a kind of Wile E. Coyote scene. It's already gone off the cliff, but the prices haven't adjusted to reflect it. So when we talk about the economy being okay, what they're implicitly measuring is just all the inflated crap. But at the real level, and this is the level that the bozos who write the news never talk about, but we see it in our lives. We see that retail in this country is dead. It's shut down. And we buy everything from Amazon, and the jobs market is so screwy that when you get these stupid job reports that talk about how X number of jobs were created and X number of people joined the labor force, none of it makes any sense, because what we see is that nobody wants to work. And at restaurants, stores, wherever you go, retail is flat on its ass dead. They can't find people to be clerks, and the labor force is not there to support a robust retail sector. And since we know that retail or goods consumption is two-thirds of our economy, that makes a difference. You know, how can you refer to the economy as being healthy if the restaurants and the stores are all dead or dying? And the dying is a pretty big piece of it, you know, meaning not quite dead yet. And I'm talking about Macy's and Nordstrom's and 10,000 movie screens. You know, they're dead men walking. The movie business in particular, which we talked about, I think the only reason that you can go to a movie on a Friday night is that the owners of the theater properties haven't figured out how to, they're very hard to convert to some other use. So the theaters are open just because the landlords don't want to foreclose, or they don't want to kick the tenants out. And, but that's something that has yet to play out. There's so many big things left to happen, such as I just mentioned, Macy's will go out of business and Nordstrom's will go out of business. All the movie theater, the movie houses are going to go out of business. So there'll be dead, empty buildings. But the same is true for branch, you know, the bank branches. When you look around and see how many banks are operating branches in little towns and big towns and every town, they're all going to close. The banks don't really want the branches. They're not quite obsolete, but they're almost there. So we've got so many shutdowns ahead of us in the brick and mortar economy that it's stupid to even talk about whether we're in a recession or not. And I didn't even get to New York City and Chicago and all the other biggies, where employers are never going to coax all their workers back into those skyscrapers. The buildings will be underused forever. They'll never again achieve anything close to capacity, and that means that the buildings are dying, but the ground floor amenities, everything from hot dog stands to concert halls and restaurants, they're dying. And the transit network below ground that brings people to these buildings is dying as well. And that's dying in a way that you'll see in interesting ways. You need a lot of subway passengers. You need the system running at capacity to make sure that the people behind those bulletproof glass windows who dispense tokens, if they even do that much anymore, can retain their retirement package, which is worth something like $110,000 with the health care benefits. So New York City is a dead man walking too.
There's a significant push on for electric vehicles. Could this cause a battery metals bull market?
I don't believe it. You know, everybody talks about electric vehicles like the energy to power them comes from the same place that our credit dollars do. You know, somebody just kind of makes them. But so when you get battery disposal and all those other things added in, the electric vehicle is really not the, it's not the future. It's not the future until we get enough nuclear power to get to run all these cars. That's not withstanding the possibility that there'll be some breakthrough on a battery side, probably the, you know, state of the art with batteries. And this is probably coming by the 2023 model year, will be cars that incorporate the batteries into the structure of the car itself. So in other words, instead of having a heavy tray of batteries beneath the floor of your Tesla, the battery will be not just integrated into the structure of the car, but it will be reinforced with adhesives and bonding agents that make the that will allow the battery itself to be a load-bearing element of the car. So that is really brilliant technology, and it will certainly produce savings in energy, but I don't see the electric vehicles, especially at the current price, as being any kind of solution. It's happening, but it's not quite as revolutionary as the news headlines would make it out to be.
Years ago, a 15-year-old girl in Vancouver invented a flashlight that ran just off the heat of your hand, and you could see any difference between heat and cold would generate electricity. But somehow that has never made it to the commercial market. And in England, when I was visiting several years ago, they developed a car that ran on compressed air. It did 80 kilometers at 80 kilometers an hour. But again, you don't see compressed air cars anywhere.
Yeah, I'm always skeptical. You know, I recall back in the 70s, company called Presley, I think it was a real estate company nominally, but they had a little demonstration where they hooked their device up to your sink faucet and a flame came out the other end. You know, it was extracting the hydrogen from the water or whatever. And of course, we had the Ponds, the Utah guys, their brief success with cold fusion and things like that. So I'm never one to, I don't believe in technological miracles, but there has been slow progress. As far as the handheld flashlight, I'm guessing it didn't put out much wattage, that you got kind of a dim light, and the car that runs on practically no gas, I've seen that before in the hands of a couple of my Atlantic City acquaintances. They used to do something called the Sparkmaster pitch, where you put the Sparkmaster under the distributor cap, and they would slowly, they would take an 8-cylinder engine and they'd cut one cylinder loose. They would, just pull the distributor wires one by one. And eventually the car was at least seen to be running on one or two cylinders pretty well, pretty efficiently, as long as the Sparkmaster was there. So anything that sounds too good to be true to me is just it's a Carnival Midway pitch.
As economic hardships kick in, are we likely to see fewer investors in the stock markets?
We may not see a stock market. I think it's one of those, I don't take it for granted, really, that I can sit down at a screen and trade E-mini S&P futures contracts. But that really reflects, well, I have to admit, there's a lot of misplaced trust that allows our markets to function. But I don't think we'll have, you talk about investors, in my mind it raises the question, invest in what? And everybody's in it right now, whether you're directly invested in the market or your life insurance company is, or your whoever runs your pension fund. But I think the investment environment looking out 5 years is going to be so dramatically changed that you needn't even ask the question about what investors are going to be thinking and doing in another couple of years. They may be just really trying to eat and keep their homes warm.
Are people flocking to Florida in search of freedom?
Well, we love DeSantis. He does so many things right, and he's such an in-your-face guy. And Florida's track record for pretty much everything has been at a level where you really can't come at DeSantis too hard. What he's doing is working, and I guess Florida is perceived somewhat as what New Hampshire makes itself out to be, represents itself on its license plates. The license plates say live free or die, but I'm not quite sure how free things are up in New Hampshire relative to Florida. But as far as the political climate in Florida, I'm happy to be there.
Rick, how can people sign up for your free trial offer and subscribe to your products?
Well, I'm glad you asked, Jim. Just go to rickackerman.com, and up at the top page there, there's I think a box or I don't know what you call it, but you click on it, free trial, and that'll get you in for, I believe, a month. So you'll have plenty of time to look at all of the things Rick's Picks offers. We do, I do a request session each month that's very popular, and we have sometimes impromptu sessions. The chat rooms are great. They've drawn great traders from around the world, and by and large are pretty helpful as far as putting out ideas that are tradable in real time. And we've got big-time traders in there and small-time traders, small-time being guys that are out to make themselves 50 or 60 bucks a day with commensurately teeny tiny risk. So again, rickackerman.com, just click on free trial and be sure to say hello when you're in the chat room.
Rick, thank you so much for being on This Week in Money.
Well, thank you again for inviting me on, Jim. It is always a pleasure.
My guest has been Rick Ackerman, editor of the newsletter Rick's Picks. His website, rickackerman.com. He was speaking to us from New Jersey. And that wraps up our show for this week. We'd like to thank our guests, Ross Clark, Doug Casey, and Rick Ackerman. And thank you for listening. If you have any questions for the show or our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. I'm Jim Goddard. We'll be back next week with more This Week in Money.
Comments made on This Week in Money are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any manner whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Archived online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. This Week in Money is a production of How Street Media Incorporated. Executive producer is Tom Allen.